Okay, thank you. I thank Gary Wohl for standing in for me, and now I'll stand in for him. So. But in any event, the previous speaker has been giving you a little hint of some of the results that were coming using the infrared heaters, and now I'll tell you a little bit about what led to the development of them. Clearly, there's the big need for studying the effects of elevated CO2 and warming on crops and natural ecosystems as well in order to figure out what's going to be happening in the future, because both CO2 and temperature are going up, and really kind of surprised at the few number of people are in this room, because there are a bunch of them in the room right next door that are saying we need warming experiments. So we're talking about them, but none of them are coming in here. Anyway, really started thinking about how we could start doing such warming experiments back in the early 1990s. And this fellow, John Hart, started this experiment with infrared heaters up in mountains in Colorado in 1991. And that experiment is still going on, so my hat's off to him for managing to keep that thing going for this very long period of time. But anyway, I went up and visited him and saw what kind of heaters he had, and he was really helpful in helping to get started here. And so that was my kudos to him. But at the same time, the more I got into it, I started realizing that there's a better way to do it. And the problem is that with the Hart's experiment, the heater's really been very weak compared to the amount of energy it takes to really warm a crop. He just plugs the heaters in and lets them go, so there's no modulation of the amount of energy that comes down through them as we go from night to day, and as wind comes and dies down. And so he's only got a nighttime treatment. So at about this same time, this fellow named Ivan Ninge, a Belgian, started to put together this kind of a homemade contraption of a heater, and he introduced measuring the temperature down below and modulating the amount of energy going to the heater. And I thought that that's a better approach to it, but you can see that this one is kind of a kludge. So what I basically did was to take the kind of heater that Hart had been using and combine it with the concept that Ninge introduced, and only he was using thermocouples to measure the temperature. I introduced infrared thermometers, and so we measure the temperature that's underneath a heater, and we measure the temperature underneath a dummy heater, and feed that into a data logger program, and the data logger then modulates the signal going to a dimmer, which changes the amount of energy coming out of the heater. And so as the wind comes up, you turn on more power. As the wind dies down, you have less. As the stomates close, you have less, and so forth. So it's a proportional integrative derivative control that's active, and we can maintain a constant temperature difference between the heated plot and the control plot. That's what the thing looked like over sedan grass. But even so, the heaters that Hart was using are rather long, and they don't give out a lot of power. So I started searching the literature, and I got a line on these Moore heaters, which have about 1,000 watts of power in a space about this big. So that I thought that had a good possibility of using these heaters. But when we put them over sedan grass and had them pointed straight down, if you look at this heating pattern, it's a very conical distribution of the energy. So I thought, oh, darn it, now I've just exchanged one problem with another. But then I conceived of tipping them on the side and spreading the energy out a little bit across the plot. And then if you start doing that, you can see where I'm going with this. And from the previous speakers, if you put it in a hexagonal pattern, and if the energy at that center point is about 1/6 of what it is here, well, let's go. You turn on two heaters opposite. You can see you start to fill in the middle. Turn on six of them, and it looked like this had some real promise for being a system that could produce some uniform heating. So This was done with GIS software, and we thought, well, if this does it, let's put together a whole array, and it looks like that. And you've seen that slide before. And then this is a thermal energy of the actual temperature distribution that we measured across there. Those are instruments. There's some spots, hot spots where the soil is showing through, but generally we've really managed to get a pretty uniform distribution of the warming pattern across the whole 3 meter diameter plot. And then we also, this is when we had the hot cereal experiment going, and you can see that out there we got really nice uniform distribution out there underneath those plots. So that was really quite encouraging. After I published a paper on the first results with the PID control, I got this email out of the blue from a guy in China saying that he wanted to put the heaters out on the Tibetan Plateau. And I said, well, we've just been testing them here. Those heaters that are the kind that Hart used, they're long. I think we've got a better hexagonal array that do it. Why don't you come down here and take a look at it? And he was in the United States at that time, so he came down to Phoenix. He liked what he saw. And so the very first experiment using these heaters was put in on the Tibetan Plateau in China. And I went out there and helped him get going. And so this is what it looked like. And we finally gotten the first paper now accepted from this experiment. And so the results are starting to come in using these techniques. The second experiment that happened was up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and they're putting it in on grazing land up there, and they too are just now getting to the point where they can start publishing data on it. And this is the hot cereal experiment that the previous three speakers have been telling you about. So I don't expect I need to tell you very much about it. Anyway, we had several different planting dates. This shows a time on this planting date where we had a reference plot and a heated plot in each one. You can tell the heated plots because there's a control panel out there. I particularly think this one's interesting because the heating accelerates the development of the crop, and when this photo was taken, the plots, for this 29 September planting had already been harvested in the heated plots, and the others hadn't been harvested yet because of the acceleration of maturity. Well, anyway, a lot of people have gotten thinking this might be the real way to do it, and right now we're working and cooperating with 16 other locations getting heaters out in the field. And this is, you know, just hardly any biological data has been published yet. None has been published yet at all. We've got one paper accepted and another one in the mill and so forth. But in any event, it's keeping me busy answering all the emails about it. This shows another picture of the heading that's going on underneath the heated plots, and everywhere around it, it hasn't headed out yet. Now, one of the things that I did was also to figure out how much energy it really takes to do this warming. And I published one paper in 2005, but I didn't handle the buoyancy effects very well, and I think that now I'm coming up with a better way to do that. And the first step is to used a equation that was published by Ray Jackson quite a while ago to solve for the difference between the canopy temperature out in your ambient plot and air temperature. So if we get what the canopy temperature is before you start heating and get that right, because it's never at air temperature. And so anyway, once you get the canopy temperature, then the next thing to do is to add the heater to it so you warm it by a certain number of degrees. And then it works out that if you do a bunch of rearranging on this thing, you can solve for the amount of energy it takes to do that heating. And so that's what I'm working on right now. And so this is some of the results that are coming out of this. So you can get an idea of exactly how much energy it does take to do one of these warming experiments. Of course, wind speed is really important. And the other thing is whether the stomates are open or not. This is plotted against wind speed. This is if you've got a rapidly transpiring crop You can see that the amount of energy it takes is up here 150 watts at no wind, and then it rapidly goes up from that. If it's dormant, water stressed or whatever, this is the amount of energy it takes. If it's at night, we're on this curve. Now, to give you an idea, John Hart's experiments are using 22 watts per square meter of energy. So he's working down in this level right here. And so you need to throw a lot more energy at it if you're really wanting to warm by any significant amount of degrees of heating at all. This is just for 1 degree C, by the way. Now then, the next slide, we're going to come in here. I think I did it at 3 meters per second. And we'll look at how many watts per square meter. Okay, same sort of thing. Okay. Yeah, the wind is at 2 meters per second. And this is the degrees of temperature rise at which you want to do the experiment. And you can see that it's not, those are curved lines on it, so just extrapolating out from 1 degree is going to make you off a little bit, but it's not really far off. But anyway, there's it at night, and you can get an idea then of how many watts per square meter it will take for however many degrees of warming you want to do your experiment. The other thing is, once you know how much energy it takes to heat the crop, is how much power do you actually have to put into the heater in order to get that amount of heating. And most of these heaters are heating elements that are sitting out there in the wind. The wind blows by them, it cools down the heating element. And so as the wind increases, the efficiency of the device goes down. So just as you need more energy, the efficiency goes down. So it's kind of a double whammy there. But in any event, we have made measurements of the efficiency of these arrays, and that's the curve that fits to our data there. It's an empirical curve, and you can see that the heater array is about 35% efficient at zero wind, and if it gets up to 8 meters per second or so, then we're down to about 17% or so efficiency. So now we can start to get at what the total cost is across the whole thing. Oh, okay, how much time I got left?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. This gives an idea of how well I was able to do the prediction of how much energy it takes and how good we can predict the temperature. The dots are observations, and the solid lines are the predictions. They go up and down, and doing pretty well in the minimums here. We're missing a little bit on the peaks. We may need to, we're still analyzing these data, but that's where we are on it right now. This shows how well we were able to do the temperature difference. We were missing a little bit. We had a nighttime set point of 3 and a daytime set point at 1.5 degrees. We weren't often able to quite get that amount of heating as we were shooting for, so we actually needed more power out there than we put out there. This is the predicted versus measured actual amount of power that was in there. There's quite a bit of data, quite a bit of scatter, but not doing real bad on that, but there is a lot of scatter. This shows the, I think you showed this one already, so I don't know how many of you are still in here or not, but during the nighttime, this is what our temperature achievement was versus our set point. We're going around here about 2.4, and we're shooting for 3. In the daytime, we were shooting for 1.5, and we're a little bit below that. And these times here in transition, the day length comes into it, so these don't have too much meaning. But here, when the sun is fully up or fully nighttime, it does have meaning. So how much does it cost to do this experiment? These are data that came from the Tibetan Plateau and Hebei, where they were heating by these amounts in the daytime and at nighttime in Cheyenne, daytime, night. And then what we actually measured here for 3 years of work at Maricopa. And I know that these figures are very solid because they are over 6 different growing seasons. And what we at approximately 10 cents a kilowatt hour. It costs $3,000 or a little less to maintain one of the, to provide the power for one of these plots for all year long. This is if it had gone all year. We didn't actually keep them going all summer, but anyway, that's what it cost. Okay. I can finish up, and thank you for your attention.